Hello everyone, and welcome to today's Charity Digital podcast on the future of content. A very warm welcome to all of you, listeners, and today all about content. I am joined by our lovely content team, Laura Stanley, Joseph Sparling, and Ewan Mark Jones at Charity Digital. And we're going to spend some time today discussing the evolution of content, because now it is evolving at an even more rapid speed. The content of today looks drastically different to the content of 5 years ago, and it will look very different to the content of the next 5 years. So let's discuss how it might look, the main changes that may take place, the core trends that are set to define the future of it, and so much more. By so much more, what do I mean? Really, the growth of video content, for instance, live streaming, the effect of content creation and social media, the surge of nano influencers, a very, very topical debate between quantity and quality, the dependency on user-generated content, and of course, let's not forget, artificial intelligence. So, without further ado, let me start by saying hello to all three of you.
Hello.
Hi. And there's quite a lot to discuss today, isn't it?
Yes. Indeed.
So I thought we could get started with the emerging trends that we are going to see over the next few months and years. And perhaps, Josie, you'd like to get started with some emerging trends that you guys have noticed in the world of content.
Yeah, so one thing I've seen is that personalised content will be more prevalent in the future, which I guess has two parts. It could either be kind of asking what the audience needs, and which obviously is very relevant to charities, and making sure their content is suited to the reader and everything, or it could be that people who are writing are just altering their message and maybe not saying everything they need to say because they want it to be so personalised to their audience. So it could be either positive or negative, I think. And rather than saying like what's needed, then just making it too personalised just so the readers are happy.
Can really resonate with it.
So that's one thing. Another thing is evergreen content, which is supposed to be valuable, like no matter what, like no matter how long has passed from it being written, more concise content. So to go along with social media and shorter attention spans, I guess, and more that will also go with like more interactive, engaging content potentially. Which could be a good thing, but equally longer content is also obviously very valuable, and we shouldn't lose sight of the value of longer content, I think. Say much more.
Thank you for getting us started already. Thank you, Josie. Johan, do you want to add more?
I think the social media thing is quite funny because I think it will be reflected in content. Content sort of follows socials a bit more now. So like it's like we prepare content to reflect what's happening on social media, which is unfortunate in a way on a personal level, but I suppose it's fine for marketing. So if you think about blogging became more micro following Twitter and stuff like that, and now you see TikTok, you see YouTuber following with shorts, and you see reels on Instagram and so on and so forth. And I think ultimately video content is going to get a lot more prevalent, but it's going to become a lot shorter. You're going to get a lot of micro videos essentially in the future, a lot more of those. I think again, on Josie's point of user-generated content, that will feed into what we're going to say about AI, and I believe that's another question. But at the same time, I think reflecting on the shortest attention spans, user-generated content is going to defeat what is becoming already, in my opinion, even pre-AI, quite a bland outlook of written content, because a lot of people... AI is basically streamlining a task that people were doing already, which is going out and finding core information and a lot of times just regurgitating it. I mean, we all do it. I've done it, you know, in the sense of finding out the information, researching. What I tried to do is add some value to that, add some originality, add some original thoughts. But a lot of people are regurgitating that information. And I think that's going to, we're going to see the end, at least we're going to, the high value content or the successful content of the future is going to be less poor quality. And a lot of that depends on the personalized, on the user generated, because they give you a unique perspective that can't be regurgitated. It's unique to the individual. So I think, yeah, individualized probably.
Okay, that's really interesting. And Laura, do you want to add to that?
I would agree with that. I think the key word, as it has been, for the, this is probably not even an emerging trend, this is just a truth, but authenticity is just going to be the key. So I think we've seen the growth of videos, for example, that have followed the trends of TikTok and Instagram Reels, that are people talking to the camera and they can be explaining something in a way that they might have explained previously with text or with in a different manner anyway. And now they will be, now people just explain it to the camera straightforward. And it doesn't have to be an expensive video. So I think we're going to see a lot more authentic, but almost user generated video.
Yeah.
Like it does not have to be a big budget anymore, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I think we've already seen charities start to do that. I'm sure at our conference there was an example of a charity that was explaining why they were doing the services that they were delivering and how they delivered them and where the funds went, and they were talking about the problem they were trying to address, but they were doing it directly to camera with it was just one of their workers talking about what the challenges they're facing. So I think we're going to see a lot more, but I think that comes down to personalization and individualization as well, because I think people are going to look to the charities for specific content. People are going to, I think people need to hone in on their USP a lot more, basically. And I think that's why I find, not to go on to AI too much again, but that's why AI is going to be a bit counterintuitive to the goal. I think because of AI potentially as well, that's going to exacerbate the need for USPs, unique selling points. If you've not watched The Apprentice like me.
I think as well with the user-generated content, that is a really good opportunity for charities to get their service users to get involved and speak for themselves. And I think Mind have a really good example that they give the platform for people who've experienced problems with their mental health to talk about it, and often how they've been able to manage and find support with that. So it's really helpful to other service users. Refuge have also done a similar thing, but they've used their celebrity ambassadors on social media to kind of be the voice reading out stories of people who've who are the survivors of domestic violence. So yeah, it's a really good way to get for charities to get people's experiences heard, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And there's an article on our site at the minute, published in the last week, on bloggers, the charity blogs we find inspiring, essentially written by one of our freelancers. And I think Mind was on there, and there were several other examples. And a lot of the ones that are sort of landing, the ones that are sticking, are those user generated, the ones that showcase your impact, showcase your service users and how you're changing lives and so on and so forth, which obviously is a great message to send. So I think we'll see a lot more of that. In other forms, I think podcasts and webinars are worth talking about. It's weird because when you do the research on these forms of content, they're all growing, and that seems like weird because I guess content in general is growing, but every form of it is growing. And I don't think that means you need to jump on every single one. Just for like practical advice, pick the ones that reach demographics. The one thing to do is podcasts are growing, webinars are growing, content, written content is growing, and videos are growing. If you look at specific feedback.
Yeah, but I think that's a trend. I think you're going to have to be reforming your content in lots of different ways and delivering it in lots of different ways. So you might have a long form video, but on TikTok that's not going to work, so you're probably better off serializing that content. The amount of reels I end up watching, follow for part two, and I never would have watched things like that,
like
a few years ago.
Documentaries.
On a makeup tutorial. It's ridiculous.
But yeah, I would say with that, just look at the demographics of each one, and specifically for small charities, I think there's almost a trend that people feel they have to do them all. And you absolutely don't. And a lot of it's sort of similar to what we say about social media all the time. Pick the platforms that are best designed for your audience. Pick the content that's best designed for your audience. If you try and do them all with a limited budget and limited resources, you will do a mediocre job of all of them. If you do two of them well, that's a far more progressive and productive way to do it. So
absolutely.
It's a really look good at the information.
There's a really good example, and it's probably not the podcast for it here, but Threads. Everyone was going ham for it a couple of weeks ago. And then
this
you could
week.
just You could just hear the call of marketers being like, we need to be on Threads, we need to be on Threads. But actually, if it's not where your audience is, I asked my friend and he was like, it's dead at the moment. It's probably not where your audience is going to be. So you don't need to rush onto it. Yeah. You don't need to rush to make content on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you might need to rush onto it. Yeah.
It's good to experiment with it. I'm not saying ignore it, but I just don't think it's something you need to rush.
I mean, Threads is a really interesting one because you just look at, it's basically Twitter, right? So you just look at the demographics of Twitter, who likes text-based platforms. Mm. So for example, like the only social media I use was Twitter and now may well be Threads because I like text-based platforms because I don't want to take selfies of myself. Selfies, they would have to be myself, wouldn't they?
Yes, because it's in the name.
That's why I like text-based stuff because I don't have these problems.
Yeah, people don't have to see your face.
But yeah, so I mean, for me, that's where I'm going to be as a demographic. That's where I will consume social media, and that's what charities need to think about. Who do they want to approach? If you want to approach people like me who are just generally grumpy, then go on Threads. Yeah. But if you don't, if you want to happy people, go, well, actually no one's happy, are they?
Wow.
Wow, strong statement.
On social, it's all performative, I think.
I would just like to say a disclaimer that I'm not saying don't go on Threads. It's just that,
well, take your time, I guess, and, yeah, exactly. And just see how it goes, and then maybe just see the trailblazers, that the charities that want to maybe try it out and see how they're doing, and hear the inspiring stories, and perhaps you know, it is a platform for you if your audience is on there. But then it sounds like from what you all described that there's going to be more voices, even more voices that are going to contribute to content creation, which in a sense is good for charities because, well, they can let their beneficiaries talk on their behalf, really. But do you think it might be perhaps a risk that so many voices create even more like noise and the sort of, you know, maybe traditional mainstream authors or content creators, the one that people look up to because they say say accurate things and correct things. Do you think it might be a risk of getting droned over the next 5 years in terms of content?
I think it's going to come down to targeting and better targeting and cutting through to the people that you want to meet properly. Mm. So I think one of the trends that we've talked about is sort of nano influencers instead of big celebrities. As long as the person, people want to just feel that they're being talked to directly and you'll cut through the noise. So I don't think the noise is, there's lots on the internet, but that's been true for years. The part of the thing is people want to feel like they're being directly talked to. And I think personalised content for that reason is going to become a huge deal because people are going to be like, that is for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think weirdly as a content team, I think one of the problem is content teams. And I think like content creators and content people tend to create content for the sake of content. And often, I mean, we'll go on to this with AI. It's more about quantity. We should have something on that. We should publish this. Let's try and get 7-10 articles out a day, all without much thought, you know, poorly written, badly produced, regurgitating pre-existing information. Without AI, people were doing this, as I said. And I think that's where the noise is. The noise is this constant regurgitation, constant publishing, and half the time they're writing it just so they can share something on socials on a given issue. And topical issues suffer from this as well. It's like something happens and everyone feels that they should say something about it. Yeah, I mean, we saw it with the Queen. I mean, this might be strange, but every single charity felt that they had to write an article, say something. You don't. You are just not with the Queen. I mean, it's good to pay your respects, but you do, of course, have to say something. And there's this almost obligation or seeming obligation for people to contribute to the discourse. Yeah. But if you don't have anything additional to contribute, my thing for a charity was just don't contribute. It's okay to sit back. Contribute where you can and where you hold expertise. And I think this is why user-generated content is so good, is because actually these people are the people we should hear from. People who service, the service users are the exact people I want to hear from about the impact that's affecting them. It's not affecting me as a content writer. So yeah, I think personalization is actually a way of cutting through the noise. The noise exists in the lack of the person.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it dilutes your own content anyway, and then people won't return to you if they're like, oh, that's always just going to be clickbait.
Quality thing again.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've alluded to it a little bit, and obviously you mentioned about, you know, the difference between ultra-focused content and personalized content, and that whole noise, the content that's being
regurgitated. And some of that content being regurgitated is coming from AI. So how do you think that might impact content in the future? Johan, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I can take this. So I think, yeah, again, I think it pinpoints what we're saying. So according to Opt-in Monster, a website I found, the average blog post takes 3.5 hours to write. I would broadly say it takes 2 to 4 hours, depending on the person, to write an 800 word article. That's my experience historically. And they're saying essentially, approximately, according to Don't Do It Yourself, which is of course an AI influenced place, they're saying it takes 30% less time. And 66% of bloggers who use AI primarily create how-to content. So those stats alone kind of tell me a picture. Yes, it saves time, but they're creating really bland, boring how-to content, mm-hmm. which already exists naturally online. So the one thing I think the impact of AI will be, as we've kind of alluded to, yes, we've been regurgitating things in the past. Now we're going to see much more regurgitation because that's what AI is. It's a machine for regurgitating pre-existing content and maybe adding stuff. But the problem with disinformation usually exists in hallucinations, which is when it's not regurgitating, which increases the risk of obviously disinformation. So you're going to see a lot more quantity in a field that already has far too much quantity. So quality, this is the kind of the positive thing that no one's talking about as content creators. Our value's gone up in a weird way. I mean, everyone's going, we're going to lose our jobs. And of course, people are going to lose their jobs. That's a really short-sighted approach from the organizations because you're going to need content creators to show you what's valuable and what's not. Mm-hmm. Suddenly quality's become super important. Whereas before, I mean, it was devalued. Now it's the most valuable thing you can mm-hmm. ask from content. So we'll keep our jobs, firstly. but then it's all about creativity and the way that writing's going to change. I'm talking mainly on writing here, but for example, the use of the personal, like not the personalized, I mean the personal pronoun, for example, the I becomes super important because you're now saying... And another maybe annoying fact is that opinion's already pretty popular. Opinion's going to become more popular because we don't care what you think. We now care what you think because we want you to differentiate yourself from the AI. So point of view becomes more important. And the final thing to say is, I mean, the books that I love historically have always broken the rules of content. I mean, not the rules of content, i.e. in marketing content, but broken grammar rules. They've broken what was expected of novels or what was expected of essays or whatever. And I think that thought is quite... nice in a way because it's quite welcome because we're going to lose a lot of the repetitive, the dull, and it's going to become more insightful and you're going to be almost forced to challenge the status quo in the way you produce content, the way you write. So, I mean, us as a team, we're going to have to take more risks and become almost more creative mm-hmm. in the way we produce written content. And that's a nice thing. So content's going to get better. And the ones that regurgitate, they'll go to the bottom of the pile, I think.
Yeah, thank you, Johan.
You're welcome.
That was very that was very insightful. And we see now your different take on AI and content bot because we had a previous podcast where you were a bit pessimistic, but now you have a different outlook towards that. And I don't know whether you want to add to that, Laura.
I feel like I've become the resident AI naysayer, and I don't intend to.
That's her nickname.
However, I do think it baffles me that a sector like the charity sector that is so reliant on authenticity, and I hate that word. I feel like it can be so overused, but it is something that. It is sort of the bread and butter of the charity sector. Mm. People want to be able to trust you. They want to be able to trust that the money that they're donating to you is going to the right place. You need to be able to be trusted for your beneficiary's sake as well. It baffles me that they would turn to AI, which isn't necessarily trusted. If I found out that I was reading an article about impact that was written by AI, I'd be very upset. I watch videos now. Sometimes it was the most ridiculous video that turned up on my Instagram, and I doubt them now because I'm not sure what's AI. It was a lovely video of a deer and it was just too cute, and you know, like, it's a bit too cute. Why is it so cute? I worry that people are already I think public trust in charities has gone down because there have been some high profile scandals. People want to know that their impact is real, and I don't think AI is conducive to talking about that. I think there are definitely areas it can be used, and I think Johan is right that it will sort of sort the wheat from the chaff. So I do think it will help.
What one do you want to be, wheat or chaff?
Wheat or chaff, yes.
I've never known that.
I used to think it was the wheat from the chaff.
What's chaff?
Oh, I
think we're the chaff. So this is where you need to take control.
I'm so sorry, everyone. But yeah, that it's essentially about sorting the wheat from the chaff and using it in areas where it's a title, for example. It can be really good there, but not in the majority of your content. I don't think that's going to be very helpful at all for the aims that charities use their content for.
Yeah, I think if charities can keep in mind their purpose, obviously, their point of view when they're communicating, and that should be like a guiding force when using AI. And I think it can be useful to kind of do tasks that maybe are more labour intensive, but obviously humans are still needed to ensure quality. But yeah, charities should always make sure they've got ethics and their own humanity or authenticity in mind. One thing we did that I think is quite good is that we've developed AI guidelines for how we use AI when we produce content or when we use it internally, just to make sure that we're being mindful with how we use it, and we're all on the same page, and are aware of kind of like the risks and benefits of using it, I guess.
I
would just also like to say everyone should read some AI articles because you can tell. I think that will explain our point quite succinctly.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you can take the problem is like the initial article that's getting edited and made nice, which is what is primarily happening. I've spotted it on several occasions, and it is disheartening to spot because it's about intention for me when they're writing a whole article and publishing it on a charity website. I've spotted it on charity websites, and they are producing entire articles. And my intention, my problem is the intention is that they're actually not aiming to add any original thought. So that's, they've gone in knowing that the AI cannot add original thought, and any original thought it has is a huge risk because of hallucinations and a data gap essentially. And you sort of go, okay, so, but you shouldn't be doing that. That's not a good thing to do to create a potential moral hazard and to also put out what could be essentially either very bland or unhelpful or valueless because it's already out there. Or not particularly value adding, at least. So I think the intention should be with your content, particularly in the charity sector, is to support people, help people, and give people additional knowledge. And a lot of that original thought will come from humans because we're naturally inclined to do that anyway. I mean, when I write, if I can't think of another example, I think of one. You know, like I'll come up with something, I'll be like, well, that could work. I mean, I wrote a 51 fundraising it's quite a popular article about ideas, and a lot of it I was kind of just off the top of my head thinking this could help. And I think it's just one example of what we do on a day-to-day, but I guess those even small micro ideas that make their way into articles are where the value lies, because every time you write 800 words you have a few little ideas that go, this could support it, that could help it. You do a bit of research, you add a bit of context, you substantiate, and those are the things that drive people forward. But regurgitating what already exists, it's not going to help overall in the long term, I think.
And then using AI as a basis, so if we take that same example of the 51 fundraising ideas, a very good article, by the way, check it out. You could ask ChatGPT, you know, to provide you with 30 ideas, and then you come up with the 21 following ones, because it already has given you some you know, some inspiration.
Yeah, it's a really good example actually, because you would say you said ask for 51, you could go through, you could pick out 20 of the good ones, because that's kind of how it works. There's a lot of bad ideas on AI and a lot of bad title options. Laura mentioned inspiration for titles, definitely agree. Use it for inspiration when you are lacking content, when you can't think, it should be and induce you to write more. But then you take what's good and then you add to that. It gives you new ideas, but the human needs to be massively
involved.
And so it should be an inspiring tool that you can use. I use it as inspiration, but I think the issue in what Josie alluded to is the lack of awareness. These are my words, not Josie's, but a general lack of awareness in the sector of the problems within AI. That's what's frustrating me, because everyone's going, have you seen it produces these incredible articles? And I'm like, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And the fact you don't know that is problematic.
Mm.
But let's put that to one side.
It's hard in a charity sector that is so time, so pushed for time, isn't it? That obviously you're going to go for something that makes life quicker.
Not just the charity sector, I mean the economy. But I guess this is a point I made, and the pessimism is now coming through, but the point I made in the past was that we have an entire economy that's so built towards profit maximization and quantity being like the essential, almost the ethos. And that to me is where the problem lies, and everyone's seeing it as a quick and easy solution. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter that the quality's not there. And that's a sad fact that the proliferation of AI has kind of highlighted that, and that makes me sad. Not a great analysis there. That makes me sad.
Another point that you were making, Laura, was about the other type of AI generated content. So you were mentioning the video of that deer that was really very cute.
Mentioned it a lot, apparently.
And you know, what are, for instance, your thoughts on the other forms of AI? Would maybe one form of AI be perhaps, more dangerous than others? I mean, like, for instance, if we carry on, say, the written content generated by AI is more of, can serve as evergreen content, whereas if you are using AI-generated images from a charity perspective as a fundraising campaign, to solicit donations because it triggers emotions, the ethics of that, what are your thoughts around other forms of AI?
I think that's it. It would depend on, I don't think it's okay to use them for manipulation purposes, even though I think manipulation is a strong word, and I don't mean that charities are manipulating people by, because that, of course, charities need to appeal to the emotions of their donors. But I think if you wanted to use, a really good example that I heard yesterday was people who want to use AI for creating content for the people who are running marathons on their behalf. That makes sense to me.
Yes,
it gives
absolutely.
Brand consistency. People who are wanting to set up their page quite quickly but personalize it so they can fill in little gaps, but it will create something for them that the charity approves of and that will work and get them the most money. That makes a lot of sense because you're empowering your fundraisers. I think using images, again, undermines your point. But I also think there are other areas you could use it that would work really well, but still with content, but not necessarily generating content. Mm-hmm. So we have a webinar on this on our site about, it's sort of about the difference between predictive AI, which we're already using as a charity sector with A/B testing and all that stuff, like what the outcomes are going to be from certain tests that they're running on emails and things like that. So the difference between predictive AI and generative AI, and I think generative AI has more dangers than predictive. I might be wrong, but I think predictive AI is a really good way,
very
as we said, the personalized content is what's going
to
be a big focus, and a way of making that content really personalized and reaching the right people is using predictive, because you can see what's worked before, but it's not actually generating the content for you
on your behalf.
So I think
yeah.
that would work quite well.
Yeah. I think, Laura, that's a really good point, and that leads us nicely to obviously looking forward and looking to the future of content, as you made a very good distinction between generative AI and what was the other word? Predictive AI. And I think predictive AI, not only for data but also for content purposes, could be very helpful for charities, because that will help you save you time. But I guess, staying for a little bit longer on AI, how could charities embrace the future of content and AI in the right way? Maybe Josie, you want to get that one?
Yeah, I think staying with your message, staying with your purpose, and if you're not saying something that's in line with your values as an organisation in terms of how you've made it and what you're saying or what you're putting out there, it's better just not to say it, I think. I just think that's better. And yeah, so basically being purposeful in how you communicate and not using AI in a way that compromises your own values. But in terms of kind of trends, maybe something like Threads or using VR or AI or anything, maybe just keeping it in your periphery and kind of knowing that it's there, being aware of how it could be used, but thinking about how it's actually relevant to your message and your purpose, and embracing it if it is relevant, but don't waste time on it if it isn't relevant. So I don't know if you've seen it, but the I've seen on the tube, the Alzheimer's Society have a new VR project for people with Alzheimer's and dementia. And they, the advert for it on the tube is like people, I don't know like what era they're from, but they're like old fashioned, like, and it makes you, it's really, it kind of like, every time I see that, it really makes me think about, oh, that like, it just makes me think. So I think having engaging campaigns like that, that maybe just kind of demonstrate and educate people and kind of make people think in different ways. I'm not sure if that was very clear.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a really good example of the difference between what I was saying, which felt like more manipulation, and that, which is genuinely changing people's like minds and how they think.
Makes you reconsider or makes you kind of like think about someone else's experience in quite
absolutely
easy, casual way. Like you just think, look at it and think, oh, that's different.
And you're not using your beneficiaries or, you know, but you're still managing to get that same emotional pull that you would get from anything else. I think that's really clever.
No, absolutely. And you want to add?
I mean, that's the positive way of sort of the positive things that I think people can do. And I think originality, as we talked about a lot, is going to be key. In the sense that finding ways to connect emotionally. I mean, we've talked about storytelling over the past for years. We've been talking about it as an emotional connection and trying to draw that emotional connection with narrative. And I think that'll be important. I think one of the things to do with written content and something I'm seeing a little bit of is like dynamic written content. So stuff like pop-up definitions within text, goosebumps style. This is something we trialed a little bit, but like a goosebump style navigation where you can actually almost tell your own story. Choose your own adventure, but you can imagine that from service users, personalized point of view, where you could actually follow their journey. You see that with video content, you see it with narrative content or audio content. You don't really see it with written, but that's there today. Just when I was doing a bit of research on this, I saw on the BBC's website, which you can see today, a report on El Salvadorian prison, which gives you a virtual tour of the prison while you're reading about the prison. It's just super interesting. All you have to do is scroll. I mean, you've all seen examples of this when you scroll down and it's giving you a sort of tour of some sort, or giving you information in a dynamic sense. But I think we'll see a lot more of that because, again, it's attention spans, but again, it's original, you know, so stuff like that. And I think in terms of like almost the other side of it, preparing for disinformation, preparing against to mitigate risk is the other important thing. And there's simple things you can do. Critically think about all the information you share. Use an AI spotter if you are going to regurgitate or take information from a place where you are suspicious of where that information came from. I mean, you should be able to verify all your sources, but also amplify credible sources. Like, be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So if people are doing the right thing and they're giving you good information, then allow them, amplify them, and
on your platform,
you know, it's just negative and positive reinforcement, essentially. Reinforce the positive and move away from the negative, and also report disinformation where and when you see it. And that might be disinformation that's through negligence, i.e. people using AI without thinking about hallucinations or any of those problems, or it could be through ignorance, but it also could be purposeful, manipulative in a different way from what Laura referenced it. But you should report it also. Just be part of the sort of positive, the journey towards a positive form of verifiable information.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very good point. And actually, when you were mentioning the fact that it's, you know, going to be even more personable and personalized for people, I think another trend that, you know, some of you might also delve more into is accessibility, and the fact that in terms of, for instance, video content, having some very engaging subtitles, perhaps generated by AI, will also help your, you know, charities' videos and content go even further. You know, charities, more and more charities are now looking at their website and looking at ways they can make it, you know, more accessible, whether that's offering several languages, offering different ways people with neurodiversity can access their website and their resources. So I think it's also a trend, well, not a trend, but an evolution to follow, because in order to make your content more personable and more engaging, you need to really be understanding of all the different types of audiences and you know, how they are and how, yeah, which mindset they have and how they are when they're accessing your website and getting in touch with your charity.
It actually picks up on a couple of points. Josie referenced the AI guidelines, for example. I think have accessibility guidelines too. So the AI guidelines should prepare you so that you don't play a role in that misinformation or disinformation or whatever. And I think accessibility guidelines allow you to make sure that you are meeting your audience's needs without. And so we put them together and it is all, you can't do everything, especially with limited resources, but see what you can achieve on a simple level. And then stuff like style guides, image guides to make sure, you know, are you using AI for images? Are you, how are you ensuring diversity within images and everything like that? So always, I think one thing, just because the word was, how do you prepare? And one way to prepare is have your solid foundation documentation so everyone can refer to them. We have them at Charity Digital where if someone raises this, does something wrong, I can go, as you, it's very passive aggressive, as you may well be aware. But then I can just refer them to a guru card or a place where they can see for themselves what we do internally.
No, I agree. Also, sort out what is a quick win, because there are many when it comes to web accessibility. Mm. So alt text is not a particularly hard thing to add. There's also loads of online tools that can tell you if your colour contrast is right and whether your font is good. We have a good article about this on the site called Where to Start with Web Accessibility, and it's specifically about those starting points. So yeah, when I think there's a long journey for a lot of the sector to go, including ourselves, but there are definitely quick wins that are there. And I think if we're talking about content, you need to make sure your content can be read and that it's providing the best possible user experience for the people that you're trying to reach, because otherwise it won't get read, even if it's the best written content in the whole wide world. So how you can prepare.
No, absolutely. Well, I think that's all we got time for today. And like I said, we had quite a lot to discuss. So thank you very much to the three of you for your contributions and for your ideas and thoughts. And we hope that it has given everybody listening to us some great ideas of things to look forward to or prepare for. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. Oh, that was a nice chorus.
And thank you to all of you for listening to us. And as always, please keep an eye out for our upcoming podcast. And see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.